Greetings, my peeps, and welcome to the All Things Basketball Podcast with your boy GD. In this episode, my week four recap, we'll talk about the CBA for the WNBA is coming up 2 weeks before it runs out. So I'll talk a little bit about that. Also, guys, Project B, this new league that's kind of having its way now. So we'll talk about that, Unrivaled as well. And also, guys, we'll talk about Nico Harrison out as Dallas GM. Also, Willie Green out as New Orleans Pelicans coach. So we'll talk about that also. Also, we have the passing of one of the Knicks players, former Knicks players. We'll talk about that also. And the new All-Star format. We'll try and flesh that out too. So just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Okay, guys, it's your boy GD back with the All Things Basketball with GD podcast. And guys, we are in the midst of it. Week four is in the books, guys, so we'll talk about that. Week five coming ahead, full steam, of course. So, but nonetheless, we'll get into all of that. So, a lot of news here. We'll see how it goes. It may end up being a two-parter, so just bear with me. So, but nonetheless, let's get underway. I'll hold off on the player of the week because I want to talk a little bit of WNBA stuff if I could. So let's talk about that. 2 weeks before the CBA runs out, guys, they're in the midst of negotiations. Of course, the league, of course, the WNBPA president, Adrian Johnson. So they're in the midst of talking. Will it get resolved by November 30th? We'll see. But it's a lot of things happening right now as far as, well, they're negotiating for higher pay. But I think the sticking point, I think I've mentioned it, is the revenue sharing. Right now it's at 9%. Which is the lowest in just about any sport. So I think that's the major sticking point. I think the Players Association wants to up that number, along with upping the salaries as well. So all of that plays a part. So we'll see how it goes. But am I optimistic about what's going to happen as far as November 30th? I'm not really optimistic, guys. I'm gonna keep it real with you. I'm not optimistic at all in terms of that. So we'll see what happens, guys. But also something that, well, a couple of things working against the league is these kind of satellite leagues like Project B, the one that's going to be starting, I believe, it's coming up rather soon. So you have this startup league, Project B. I believe they're going to be in Israel, if I'm not mistaken. You already got two players on board, guys. The WNBA, the player president, Neko Umeke, she signed up to play in this league, and then they were able to pluck a player from Unrivaled, Alyssa Thomas. She's going to play in this league as well. So it's going to be very interesting, the kind of players they're able to line up. And with players coming in, they're talking about equity, having equity in the league, and things of that nature. So it's quite intriguing. I must say, quite intriguing. You know, you already have Unrivaled, which are paying the players a nice chunk of change. So now you have this league going, and someone asked the question. In fact, let me see if I can find it. Give me one second. It's someone I follow, Bailey Jackson. She posed this question, and I'm kind of with her as far as that goes. So, yeah, here it is right here. I knew I saved it. So this is Bailey Jackson talking about the two leagues. Here we go. Hang on.
Do more leagues stop helping women's basketball and start hurting it? Recently, Project B was introduced to us, a new international professional women's basketball league set to launch in November 2026. The league aims to compete with the W by offering players higher pay and equity in the league, very similar to Unrivaled. And it's already attracted players like Nneka Ogumike and Alyssa Thomas. But that's exactly where the concern comes in. While these leagues might seem like progress on the surface, more opportunities, more pay, more visibility, they also risk splintering the sport. Based on what we're seeing so far, Project B will be full of vets on their way out trying to get the money they should have earned throughout their careers. Unrivaled will draw the NIL era stars, and Athletes Unlimited will be a space for players who are trying to stay on or fight to be on a roster. Almost like the G League, it's almost been a path back for women to find their way back into the WNBA. Meanwhile, the W once had everyone and fumbled the bag out of pure greed. Now, if Unrivaled and Project B can offer the same, if not better, visibility and pay, what's the incentive to play for the W? At what point do more leagues stop?
So that was Bailey Jackson, someone I follow. She's very good. And I agree with a lot of what she said. You know, you have, oh, and I was mistaken, it's going to start next November 2026. So you're going to have that league. You're going to have the Unrivaled, as she said, with a lot of the NIL type players coming into that league. And then you have Athletes United. So you got three leagues that's happening. Does that hurt the WNBA itself? Here's where I'll say no. I'll say no because these aren't leagues that are running absolutely parallel with the WNBA. They're happening in the off seasons, in other words. So I don't think the threat is there. I don't think the threat is as imminent as one would think. But these are leagues that are paying more money. Maybe a player says, you know, I earned my money in Project B. I earned my money in Unrivaled. Maybe I'll sit out a WNBA season. That could bear some fruit. But, yeah, I think it's too early to flesh that out. But I think the possibility for disaster looms as far as that goes. So I'll just leave it there as far as that goes. But very interesting discussion, that's for sure. So there you have that. And then I want to talk about Becky Hammon. She went on a podcast, guys, and she had some interesting things to say in terms of the commissioner of the WNBA. If I can grab that sound. Give me one second, guys. I think I have it. No, I have. Those are the quotes. But there's actual sound from her talking about this. Oh, yes. I got it. Okay, guys. This, I believe she was talking to, I think it was the podcast with Candace Parker and also, Aaliyah Boston, yes. So here's what Becky Hammon had to say. No, this is about her being a head coach. What's your favorite hoodie blazer? Yeah, I'm not finding that quote. All right, so I'll read it to you guys. I'm sorry about that. Here's what she had to say. She said, I would say they're probably going to look for a change in leadership. I just think it might be too fractured at this point. This is what she said regarding that. I don't know if she can ever kind of regret, retract, and get that traction back from those conversations. And the one thing that the league always stood for is when the players speak, people need to sit up and listen. I think Kathy is sitting up and listening now as opposed to before. But she did mention that, you know, there could be a possible change in leadership. Do I think that'll come to fruition before the season begins? I think it's a possibility because, you know, what was said by Nafisha Collier was not a good look. And it seems like everybody went into CYA mode, especially Adam Silver, as if, you know, we're backing Cappy no matter what. But I think as the dust settles, I would not be shocked if there's a change at the top in terms of leadership. Who would I like to see in that position? I think it has to be someone who can be the bridge between the players and the owners, who can maintain that delicate balance, if you will. In my mind, somebody like Cheryl Miller comes off the top of my head. She, I think, can pull it off. I know a lot of people say Lisa Leslie, but I think she has bigger things. Well, actually, that's kind of big being a commissioner, but I don't know if that's what she wants. I think she much more wants to be, you know, closer to the players than to the ownership. So it'll be interesting nonetheless. So that was just something that caught my eye during the week, so I thought I'd share it with you guys. So there you go. All right, so with that said, let's talk about the NBA. And as we always do, guys, we'll talk about the players of the week for week four, and then we'll get to those top stories. Players of the week. In the East, how about Jalen Johnson, guys, for the Atlanta Hawks? He has been healthy thus far this season, guys, and he showed you what he can do in this week here. His team went 4-0, and they were on the road, guys. Actually, they were out west, and all road wins, guys. They beat the Clippers in L.A. They beat Sacramento in their house. They beat the Utah Jazz in Salt Lake City. And they beat the Phoenix Suns at Footprint Center. So, Atlanta Hawks, man, look out. They're one of the hot teams in the league right now. And a large part due to Jalen Johnson. Now, remember, guys, they are without Trey Young, but Jalen Johnson has stepped up big time. He's averaging 24 points a game, 12 rebounds, and over 9 assists, guys. In fact, he had this crazy stat line on November 13th. And this was the win against Utah. Here's what he did, guys. 31 points, 18 rebounds, 14 assists, and get this, 7 steals, guys, in that game. Wow. That's the kind of week Jalen Johnson had. So Jalen Johnson, and also he was tremendous from the field, guys. Over 60% from the field. 8 for 14 from 3 and 18 free throws made against 23 attempts. So Jalen Johnson, your player of the week in the East. And in the West, the Joker, guys, Nikola Jokic. His team went 3-0 for the week, guys. All of their wins were on the road. How about that? At Sacramento, at the LA Clippers, where he dropped a 55-piece, tying the most points in this season thus far, tying with, of course, SGA, who did it on opening night. And at the Minnesota Timberwolves, where he puts up a triple-double, guys. 37 points, 12 rebounds, 11 assists. Joker for the week averaged 39 points per game, 13 rebounds, and 8 assists, guys. That's the kind of week he had. Sensational from the field, guys. Well over 73% from the field. Gracious. And then from 3, like Jalen Johnson, 8 for 14. And from the free throw line, 27 attempts, and he made 24, guys. So the Joker, your player of the week in the West. All right, guys, so let us move on. Top stories, guys. Nico Harris, the embattled GM for the Dallas Mavericks, out as the Mavericks GM. Guys, they fired him after 11 games where he has a 3-8 record. And his over 4 years on the job, his record, 182 wins, 155 losses. The team made a conference finals and they made an NBA finals, guys. And the funny thing is, in the conference finals, they had a whole different team, and the NBA finals, a whole different team, outside of one player being the common thread, and that's Luka Doncic. He saw early that the Luka and Kristaps Porzingis pairing didn't quite pan out because there was a clash between the camps, if you will. So they traded Porzingis to Washington Wizards in return for Spencer Dinwiddie and Davis Bertans. Also, they signed Kyrie Irving as a free agent. Big move for them. And then they pulled off a midseason trade where they got PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, and that propelled them to the NBA Finals, which they had made that same year. And then the big move that put Nico Harrison in the crosshairs of the fans and the media and everyone else, putting them under scrutiny, trading Luka Doncic for Anthony Davis and Matt Christie. That was the trade heard around the world, guys. And Nico caught a lot of heat for that. And then they would go on to win the draft lottery. A lot of people said, you know, the kind of like the, I don't even like to mention that, but the supposed frozen envelope that New York got when they got Patrick Ewing, supposedly, but that's a fable, if you will, if you ask me, but that's a story for another day. So they're able to draft Cooper Flagg number one overall with that pick. So in the interim, the job of GM will be handled by both Michael Finley and also Matt Riccardi. So there'll be two guys doing the job at the moment until they bring someone in. Now, of course, you know, a lot of the media heads, it was like betwixt and between. Guys like Charles Barkley was saying that they made Nico Harrison the scapegoat. Also, Rob Parker said the same thing. Mind you, this is the same Rob Parker. It has to be made known. He's the one who was okay with Luka Doncic being traded to the Lakers. So the tape is out there, Rob, so you can't deny that. So there you go. Now he calls Nico the scapegoat. So a little revisionist history, if you will, from Rob Parker, but I digress. I did want to play you some sound, guys. This is from Hall of Famer, career Dallas Maverick, Dirk Nowitzki. You know now, guys, he's on the NBA on Prime. So he's part of the studio show. Him, Steve Nash is there, Blake Griffin, and of course hosted by the talented Taylor Rooks. So this is what Dirk Nowitzki had to say. I need to get this sound, guys, so you hear it. So you hear exactly what's said. I'll just scroll through. And okay. This 9-minute clip. I need the shorter clip. Okay. Actually, I have two bits of sound. I have Dirk Nowitzki's reaction to Nico Harris being fired and Luka Doncic. They asked him, of course, we know he's a Laker now. So here's Dirk Nowitzki first, guys.
Well, I think there's just too many distractions, too much going on to keep going this way. This move should have probably happened this summer, honestly. I didn't want this negative energy and this black cloud over the Cooper Flagg era. But here we are now, and this trade just made no sense. It made no sense to them, and really there was no explanation for it either. And it felt like the fans feel like they got robbed of actually seeing the end, seeing this through, seeing Luka develop, into a, hopefully a champion one day. And it feels like they never got to see the end to this. So this was very heartbreaking. And but now it's, you know, I think it's time to move on.
So that was Dirk Nowitzki saying that you should have moved Nico in the off season, like during the summer. You should have relieved him of his duties then instead of dragging him into the regular season and then giving him the heave-ho after 11 games. To which, you know, only thing with that is they'll be like, I think what saved his job was them winning the lottery. I think that saved Nico Harrison's job, although it's not like he had control over, you know, how everything shook out with the draft lottery. So I think anybody could have made that pick, but I think the draft lottery saved this job. That's my opinion. So there you have that. Now I want to play for you Luka. Luka was asked about Nico Harrison being fired. And I'll let you listen for yourself.
I just wanted to get your reaction to or what your thoughts were on seeing the news of his firing.
I mean, just see the Dallas fans, players, they always have a special place in my heart. You know, I thought I was going to stay there forever, but I didn't. So they'll always be a special place for me. Always I can call it home. But right now I'm focused on the Lakers, you know, trying to move on. But obviously always is going to be part of me in there. But just trying to move on.
So that's Luka giving the classy answer. He did not address whatsoever Nico Harrison in the slightest. So kudos to Luka for doing that. Now, here's what I want to say about it. I think two things are happening kind of at the same time. I think in one hand, yes, it's unfair to fire Nico. First of all, he didn't have his entire team on the floor. You still had Kyrie, who you hoping to get back in 2026. So at some point in the season, probably, like I said, into 2026, you'll get Kyrie back. What version of Kyrie you get, we'll see. And then there's the specter of Anthony Davis, who I'll talk about him in a minute. But we know of his injury history and so forth. So you didn't have a full team, so that part of it, you can make the argument that that's unfair. And then you have the other side of it where Nico Harrison is everyone's punching bag because of the Luka trade, which we all know Nico Harrison doesn't make that move in a vacuum on his own. Management has to sign off on that. So ownership has to sign off on that. So to have Nico fall on the sword for something that ownership may have pushed. Ownership may have pushed that deal. Who knows? But I think that's where things get murky for me. The fact that, yes, the trade was made, but Nico Harrison doesn't start the trade happening, and he doesn't make that trade without the blessing of ownership. That's all I'll say with that. So we'll see what happens. But again, Nico Harrison out as Dallas GM. So there you have it. All right, let us move on. Willie Green. You could call him kind of embattled, if you will. He's out as the New Orleans Pelicans head coach. And this is after 12 games, guys, where they had a 2-10 record, guys. Not good. He will be replaced with assistant coach James Borrego. James Borrego, we know, coached the Charlotte Hornets, but he was there as an assistant in New Orleans. Now he gets bumped up to the head coaching position for the moment. Willie Green, in his over 4 years, he has the same kind of tenure as Nico Harrison, if you will. So in his 4 years, he has 150 wins against 190 losses. So he's 40 games under 500 as a coach. His teams did make two playoff appearances in those 4 years, so there you have that. Both first-round exits, so not much you could do with that. But I think the biggest thing that probably probably getting swept under the rug is the fact that Zion Williamson, his star player, in those 340 games, you know how many games Zion Williamson played in those 340 games? When I saw this number, I fell out of my chair. 134 games, guys. Wow. That's not good, guys. That's not good at all. 100. That's not even. If my math is right, it's a little more than a third of the games. Wow. That is crazy. Think about that. Willie Green, I think it's a miracle that he's only 40 games under 500. The fact that he only had Zion 434 games. That's insane to me. But you know something? I hope Willie Green gets another bite at the apple somewhere down the road. This to me, this was unfair. This was unfair because you really haven't. It's not that you haven't given him much. It's that your star player hasn't been available. Your star player has not been available. So what's a coach to do? That's like, let's take a Tom Thibodeau, although he's not with the Knicks. That's like Tom Thibodeau and 340 games not having Jalen Brunson. Although Jalen Brunson has only been there past three or so seasons now. So imagine not having Jalen Brunson a little over a third of your games. That's insane, guys. So I say all that to say Willie Green, I think he, you could make a case him being a scapegoat, but, and then now you got not only Zion that's in and out of the lineup, you don't have DeJounte Murray, you just lost Jordan Poole, I'll talk about that in a minute, so what's a guy to do? What's a guy to do? So, you know, anyhow, so that, yeah, I just hope he's able to get a job in the future, Willie Green. I think he could be a good head coach in the NBA. If you give him the pieces, man, you got to give him the pieces. So there you go. All right. So let us move on from there. The NBA, their newest All-Star format. And guys, when I tell you it's confusing, I call it a convoluted mess. So I'm going to, for the sake of this discussion, I will read from the NBA.com site what they plan to do. So it was announced last week. In fact, I want to say it was last Wednesday that they announced it. It was last Tuesday, I'm sorry. So here's what they're saying. Now, you know, the games are in the Clippers home arena now, which is the Intuit Dome in Inglewood, California, right? So in the 2006 NBA All-Star game, two teams of U.S. players and one team of international players, known as the World Team, will compete in a round-robin tournament featuring four 12-minute games. The three teams will each have a minimum of eight players. So let me continue. In the past, 24 NBA All-Stars were will be selected as follows. 5 honored as starters from each conference will be selected by the fans, current NBA players, and the media in a media panel. So it breaks up 50% fans, 25% current players, 25% media. And then 7 players honored as reserves from each conference will be selected by the head coaches. This year, the All-Stars will be selected without regard to position. The process for assigning players to the two U.S. teams will be determined at a later date. So they don't even know how to even work that as far as that goes. If NBA All-Star voting does not result in the selection of 16 U.S. players and 8 international players, which can include American players with ties to other countries if necessary, then the commissioner, Adam Silver, will select additional All-Stars to join either group to reach that minimum. In that case, at least one team will have more than 8 players. That's where it gets confusing, guys. Okay, more confusion. In the round-robin tournament, Team A will play Team B. The winner from Game 1 will take on Team C in Game 2, followed by the losing team of Game 1 meeting Team C in Game 3. After Game 3, the top 2 teams by record will advance to face each other in the championship game, Game 4. If all 3 teams have a 1-1 record after Game 3, tiebreaker will be point differential in each team's 2 round-robin games. So that is the format. Guys, I'm not thrilled with this. I'm really not. I usually do the All-Star voting and all that. To me, it don't even make sense because they have to reach a certain number any way you slice it. And for them to figure out that they're going to have 16 U.S. players and 8 international players, you're saying to me that you don't have enough international players to have it be USA against the world. You don't have 12 international players that are considered all-star level players. I don't get that. I don't get that at all. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think that's the route they should have went. They should have had, when the all-star voting comes up, you have a list of USA players that you can vote from, and you have a list of international players you can vote from. I get it. I understand you may get some players that might not be all-star calibers, quote unquote, but the cream is going to rise to the top anyway. You're going to have probably about 8 to 10 players playing in the game anyhow. If you got 2 guys that are like 11 and 12 on the roster, you're not going to go too crazy about that. So I think they dropped the ball big time with this. It should have been a 12 roster, although I prefer they have a 15-man roster, but I digress. And this is the year you could have pulled it off. 12 U.S. players and 12 world players. You have enough players, guys, to have a roster of 12 international players. Let's not get it twisted. So even in what I read, it said it could be U.S. players with international ties. So you had that element there, guys. So I think the league dropped the ball big time with this. I think they did. So They didn't do themselves favors with this, I think. So, and, you know, other people will argue, it's not all about the format. It's all about them giving effort and all these sort of things. I think if you had the U.S., a pure USA versus the world and not this round robin nonsense, you could have had a competitive game. But I think the NBA dropped the ball with this one. So how it fleshes out, we'll see. But I have no desire to do any voting whatsoever because it's a mess. So if fans want to go vote on it, fine. But I'm not doing it. So there you have it. So that's my analysis as far as that goes. And then one last thing, and then I'm going to split this up, guys. In fact, I'll end it here, and I'll just do another episode. So, all right, guys. So I thank you for listening. I'm going to have a part two to my week four recap, guys, because it was a lot of news that was covered here. But I still have more news, like I said. The injuries, guys, I have something recent as far as injuries goes to report on. So I'll give you that. Performances of the week, I'll talk about that. I haven't really done that as of yet, so we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about passing of a New York Knick legend, if you will. So, all right, guys, thank you for listening. All things basketball with GD.com is the website. There you find my episodes, my clips. Also YouTube. I have a YouTube channel, guys. LinkedIn. I link my episodes to LinkedIn and usually get traction there. Also, all the podcast platforms. I'm on them all, guys. Apple, Spotify, all the things. So if you see it, like the videos, comment. 5 stars, guys. 5 stars. Remember that. Donate, guys. I got a donate button on my website, which have a button for PayPal, Buy Me a Coffee, and Spotify Donate. Also, in the scroll is my Cash App, $GD that sports do. Again, $GD that sports do. Also, guys, when it comes to social media, TikTok, Instagram, some Blue Sky, some Facebook, that's it. Thank you for listening, guys, and stay tuned for part 2 of my week 4 recap coming soon. Take care.